You're listening to the Something Beautiful Podcast, Extended Edition. I'm Jonathan Blundell.
No.
Yeah. All right. Now I am, so now everything's official on the record.
Hey. I like being the person asking the questions, not answering questions.
That is why I don't do a lot of interviews.
I do trust that your editing skills will make me seem somewhat coherent and somewhat intelligent.
I'll try.
Thank you.
Because you've lucked out, because if you had been in our podcast the first 4 years, 5 years, we didn't do any editing. Unless it was for specific quality, or they're like, wait, I really need to say that over. But for the most part...
Can we take this off the record for a minute?
Yeah, but for the most part, it was... We just ran it raw, and that was that. And, you know, people like that.
Right?
But...
There's an element of reality there that maybe doesn't need to happen today.
But there's also an element of the show becomes an hour long.
And it's an hour?
Well, it was at that point.
Oh.
And so people would...
He didn't mention an hour.
People
out there.
Yeah. All right, so I'm here. We're at St. Arbucks, the Church of Caffeine, with Don Johnson, who also goes by East Texas Photo.
Among other names.
Yeah, and you have a blog as well now, a new blog.
This
is your fifth or sixth blog?
Probably.
Or 12.
It's probably had five or six posts in the last month, is the way it's going.
But you're doing good food. You're doing good food reviews.
Little local food flavor and a little bit of politics even, which is a lot of fun for me because I like to stir the pot a little bit. And just local happenings. There's a little bit of a lack of news coverage in some parts of the county, and so... I can't stop doing that just because I left the newspaper, so there we go.
No, so you just gave your whole story away just by that one question.
Oh, well.
So what is the blog?
The blog, 175and20.blogspot.com.
And what is that's random numbers to a lot of people. But.
Right, 175 and 20 are the two... Are two of the major highways that go through Kaufman County, which is where I live most of my life, even though I technically live outside in Dallas County. And within the corridors of those two highways is a lot of interesting people and a lot of interesting happenings. So that's where my people are, and that's where I get to talk about.
Very cool. Now, you worked in the newspaper business, as you hinted at. Did you start out doing photography for newspaper?
Yes, in a way. I've always been a photographer since high school and everything else, so it's kind of natural that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a journalist coming out of high school, and then realized that maybe I needed to experience some more life. And long story short, it wasn't until 2007 I bought a nice digital SLR camera and started learning quickly, because you can with digital. If there's any advantage, it's the learning curve gets so much shorter. And 2009, I went to work for, had the opportunity to work for Michael Gresham at the Tribune. He took me on, even though I didn't really know what I was doing. And very quickly, kind of figured out the ropes of journalism. I had the mind for it, but you develop the skills pretty quickly because there's so many varied things that you have to do, writing and photography-wise. So it came along pretty quickly, and community journalism is still a good thing to do and a good place to be, and I left that 3 years later, so there's a lot to that, but
I understand.
Personal life changes as well as careers.
Yes, for some reason, personal life tends to get in the way of journalism, or journalism gets in the way of personal life, so you really have to decide, I think, which is your preferred route.
That's exactly right, because, and I was warned of this, we had some friends move down to Salado. We went to a July 4th event with them down there, and there was a photographer running around, and it was right at that decision point of me leaving my former job as a computer rental salesman, of all things. Make good money there. But I was talking to this guy, just a random guy, shooting a July 4th event, and I said, you know, what's the upside and the downside, because I'm going to do this. And he said, it's July 4th, and you're with your family, and I'm not. And, you know, just in one sentence, he told me exactly what I would be facing there. And so we ran into that a lot over 3 years at the Tribune was the life of covering other people's events takes over from your own. So it really is a lifetime commitment sort of thing, right. Or a lifestyle commitment.
Right. And so after those 3 years, you had a life change.
Well, yeah, a couple years into that, we had a son, and that changes everything, as you know better than I do. And the opportunity to stay home and work essentially part-time and be a photographer was there, and the money difference is not as much as you might think. For an entry-level journalist, is not a family-supporting type pay scale. So, yeah, it's been a great... he'll be three next month, so... It's been a great couple of years of being at home with Joshua as he grows up, and now it's probably time to go make more money to pay for that stinking childhood stuff. Good Lord, nobody said it was that expensive.
Now, you said that you did some photography in high school. Were you doing it for the school newspaper or yearbook?
We didn't have. I graduated from Kemp, Texas. Don't hold that against me, but we had.
Which
yearbook.
Is for those that aren't familiar, right. A very small
3A Texas school. I think we had 70 something in my graduating class. So,
were you in the top 50 or the bottom 50?
I was in the top.
Nice. I'm talking to a genius here.
But no, best advice I had in high school was from a dear teacher who is still there, Mr. Reed, if you're ever out there, was don't forget you're leaving Kemp, Texas as the top of the class, and you are going to enter a big, big pond with a lot of really smart people. And that was good advice that I didn't really understand until, you know, maybe last year.
Right.
But no, I don't remember where we're going with that. Yeah, in high school, I shot, you know, learning film, of all things, darkroom techniques and all that stuff, and learning about shutter speed and aperture and all the various technical details of photography. And then I went to TCU for one whole semester in 95 and shot for the TCU Daily Skiff, just shooting random assignments and stuff like that. Life changed. I realized how expensive college was, and didn't want to get in debt doing that, so went and played in a band instead. You know, typical college life there.
Now the real question is, which makes more money, photography or playing in a rock band?
Well, in that case, it's photography. We weren't very good, no offense to my bandmates.
What is this about these creative avenues that they just don't make any
well,
money?
That's the thing that I've learned, you know, since really I've done sales as a career, part of my previous life career, and it really is the art of sales is more important than any other art if that's going to be your business. And I could sell to people a service or something that they want. It is very hard to push yourself on people. And so I was just thinking about this. I heard on Accidental Creative, if you're a fan of that, a Steve Martin quote of, and somebody wrote a book title now too called Be So Good They Can't Ignore You. And so that's really good, except that people can still ignore you when you're really good. And I'm not really good yet, I don't think, but you strive for that, but you can also be so in front of their face all the time that they can't ignore you. So, I mean, there's a business side of that that really goes along with being a creative that people ignore or fail at a creative business because of. And that's a fear of mine. You know, that's, I think everybody's fear in creative arts. I've got to make this happen, and I'm focusing it on the wrong avenues or focusing on the wrong part of it. And it's like the constant struggle that I never really thought about. I knew about because I'd heard people talk about, but you don't really experience it until you get out there and go, holy cow, these people haven't paid in 60 days. How do I get my money out of them? Or, you know, the business plan for next month is not coming through. So, you know, what do you do? The business aspect of it. And that's what I finally went back to school for was shout out to Laterno, one night a week, 6 years. You can do it. But that's kind of where that went. And so, yeah, I've been a photographer my whole life, really. But it wasn't until recently, 2007, 2008, that I really took the passion to become better at it and see things differently. I just got finished teaching kids at 4-H Club, and it's like the opportunity to do things like that is as valuable as anything else, because you're actually, the feel goods come in there. But trying to tell kids how to take pictures wasn't nearly as fun as telling them, by the way, the beginning of the meeting, they learned how to kind of Robert's Rules of Order stuff. They were making motions and they were doing old business and new business and all these like business meeting things. And I'm like, okay, you can learn how to take good pictures. The other stuff you're learning here is actually going to be stuff you use to run the world. Okay, so don't forget that. You know, it's like, why didn't I learn all that stuff when I was a kid? Anyway, I digress.
So 2007-2008, you said you bought your first DSLR, mm-hmm. digital SLR camera. What would you say getting that camera from what you were doing in high school or college, what would you say, obviously digital is the first big change, but what would be the biggest change between those two time frames as a photographer, you know, coming back in, what did you have to relearn or what did you have to...
The biggest thing was not, I mean, the camera controls are all exactly the same, but you immediately know what you're doing or doing wrong, as the case may be. And so the change was the cameras are the big change, but the internet, of course, was the other big change, because all the information, strobist.com, all these resources that people have put out there to learn in a week what would have taken you months and months to figure out what you were doing, that's just insanely different than, say, mid-90s when I was in high school trying to learn photography, shooting on the sidelines of, I didn't know how bad the light was in Kemp, Texas football stadium, you know, now. I go back and say, how did I even make any pictures back then? You know? Or you look at the work of the people back in the 50s, 60s shooting manual focus cameras, and they're getting these absolutely amazing shots for Sports Illustrated going, I'm pretty sure I couldn't do that, you know, without the help of the camera. But you got to remember that the technology is a little bit of a upside and a downside.
Right. So how would you say then, you know, seeing both aspects of it and kind of coming back to it after a little bit of time.
Right.
How do you think technology and the internet has changed photography? I mean, it seems to me, so we're doing a survey right now where we're going out interviewing students, and we're talking to students we're filming them with our DSLR. You know, we've got the Zoom recorder, we're doing this all digitally. And we're asking them about the photos that they take on their telephone.
Yeah. Sure.
Sure. The photos that they take on their telephone, like I don't know that we let that sink in really, but there's been a huge shift from when I grew up. You know, the Instamatic cameras, you put the film in and you snap it, and you had to turn the bulb and wind it and snap it, turn the bulb, wind it.
Right.
How would you say that the internet and the digital realm has changed photography?
Yeah, photography itself, obviously. I mean, the fact that everybody has a camera, the fact that I was just talking to a group of 8 to 16-year-olds that when I asked them, do you have something, a device that takes pictures, every one of them did. 8-year-olds with, you know, iPhones or iPods are taking pictures and video. So sheer availability and access to great technology for every age and every, you know. I heard somebody say that the iPad, you know, iPad is not a camera thing on the web, right? But for people my parents' age, it's the best camera ever because it's the biggest screen you can get, right? Technology is access. And so you have every bit of the ability to learn, the ability to take pictures, the ability to share them with the world. The other thing I was just, anytime I talk to kids about this stuff is, everybody's a journalist now. It changed journalism entirely. If you're posting something on Facebook, you're a journalist because that's where people go to get information. If you are putting pictures on Instagram, that, you know, you're okay, you might be taking pictures of your food and nobody cares. Fine, I do that all the time. But you're also sharing some information about the world around you for other people. So that's the other big thing. The ability to learn, the ability to share it so quickly. And, of course, the business side of it. I don't shoot anything anymore that doesn't include the digital files, which I think pisses off some established photographers because they're still based in a model where you're selling prints. It's a different age and a different time, so you have to charge differently and everything else, and people are not adapting to that. But everybody will eventually, right? It's funny, I have a friend who was a photographer in the 70s, 80s. Old guy. Oldish guy. No offense, old guys. But he was talking about...
They're probably not listening to a podcast.
Well, he was telling me one of the sales tactics they would use is... And he was a portrait photographer in a... I don't think they were like a mall, but studio. And so they would have people come back in to view their proofs, and they would print 8x10s. They'd print a 16 by whatever. And would you like to buy any 8x10s? Here's one. Look at this. It's your family. It's beautiful. But no, we're not really interested in an 8x10 for $25 or $30 to $50, whatever it is. And they just rip that thing apart and throw it in the trash can. I can't even imagine doing that to anybody's picture. It's somebody's family. There's a picture. You printed it. It's not worthless. But attaching the value to the ownership of the copyright and everything else, it's just a different idea than we have now where, you know, the pictures you've taken exist. They're accessible some way or another and should be. And so I completely agree with copyright ownership to the extent that, you know, you've created some piece of art, whatever, and there's a value there that needs to be, you know, purchased. But to not include those images for me, just from a customer service standpoint, you've captured these moments, and then what do you do with them? Well, they're going to sit on my hard drive, or I'm going to give them to whoever paid for them. It's not something I can say, I'm just going to erase all these images. It might be something that you want in 100 years, sure. Your kids may want these, whatever. But I'm not gonna erase those images forever. No.
Yeah.
Why do that?
Right.
The technology exists to hold them.
Yeah.
We can get into a whole other discussion about why we try to create a paper legacy for ourselves. My wife's a scrapbooker. We can go there if you want to.
Well, what good does that do anybody?
Let me ask you, as well as technology, one of the things that I hear a lot is, well, you're a photographer, but it's because you have a really fancy camera.
Oh, yes.
You have a $2,000 camera, and I can take the same photo with my iPhone. Or
sometimes you can.
Or I can take the same photo. I can go out and buy a $1,000 camera, and I can take the same photo. So why are you charging me $500 or $200, you know, whatever the price is? Because all it is you just have a fancy camera.
That is some people's perception of that. Obviously, there are other things involved. But really, because you need somebody else to capture a picture. I take my own family photos, of course, with a little push-button remote, right? Pocket wizard, fire the camera. And almost every time I wish, and my wife, who is the scrapbooker, wishes we had somebody else come and do it. Because there's a whole element of interaction with a photographer that's going to either kill a session or make it better, you know. There's always something that they can see from the camera's viewpoint that you can't see as a subject. And hopefully, as a photographer, I want to continue to develop those sort of personality traits that make it worthwhile to be. And that's sort of the sales pitch now for new photographers coming in, selling themselves as a service instead of a commodity of, yeah, you could take this picture with your iPhone. You absolutely can. Sometimes the light is right. It's beautiful. But there's more to it than that behind the scenes. And the people who have a value for what they're getting will pay for that. And those who don't will have iPhone pictures. And that's okay.
With Instagram filters.
Right. And I'm okay with that, too. It's fun to make fun of, and it's fun to read the little quips on the internet about what you think a photographer does, or here's what a photographer really does, the editing time and the gas money, and et cetera, et cetera. But in reality, everybody's a photographer now, and that's okay. That's a good thing in reality. So it's just a matter of that old mindset of selling prints and being exclusive holders of the information on how to do it is way far gone. That's way over. So eventually the people who believe it will be over too, and that happens, right?
Yeah.
So there we go.
Now let me ask you too, from a digital perspective, a lot of times you'll probably hear, well, can you Photoshop this out, or we're going to do this or that. Can you Photoshop this in? Can you Photoshop that out?
Or I mean, this person.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole digital realm. What do you think about, as a photographer, as a professional photographer, what are your thoughts on Photoshopping and correcting whatever?
There's just the separation from being a photojournalist. If I'm shooting for a paper, then clearly that's not going to happen. You can do a number of things that either make it print well or display well, but you can't change reality. If you just had a bad night at the football game, you're just going to have bad pictures, and there's not much you can do about it. If you take that into just straight the business realm, your creative vision gets taken over by whoever your client is, and that's, you got to be okay with that, or you don't do commercial work. You know, you just make a name for yourself and do fine art, whatever, you know. If you get to a point in your career where you get to make all the creative decisions, good for you. Until then, other people can say, guess what, this person can't make it, put them in the picture, please. And you say, yes, that'll cost this much. And that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. There's not some sort of crossover where photojournalism has to take over the business realm, in my mind. Some people may have a problem with that. But the reality of the world is that people can't always be together, that people put up telephone poles where you don't want them. As long as there's no deception about what that process was, it's just work to me. I mean, yeah. I don't care. It's like HDR. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people make it look really ugly. But guess what? It's okay. It's the world as you saw it. Whatever.
Yeah.
Just don't tell me you didn't do it.
Now, in thinking about that, what would you say is a skill set now for someone coming in to photography? What would be your, you know, whether you're telling the 4-H kids or whether you're telling the high school student or someone maybe graduated from college, what is the skill set then with all this digital realm that you need to have to be a professional photographer?
Photography has to be good. People skills have to be better. Clearly the photography has to be there. It goes back to that thing, you know, you want to be good enough that people recognize your work or see it and go, hey, I would hire that person. That's good. But if you can't sell yourself, and this is where I'm the worst. I'm the worst person to give sales advice on selling yourself. I could sell a customer something that they already wanted all day because that's easy. But to go out and push yourself and say, oh, no, hire me. The business aspect is the hardest because you're not at your creative thing. You're at your and people who put it together, or I've heard the best thing to do is hire people who don't have necessarily the artistic mind, but they have the other thing to do that for you. I need to work on that. But really, it's people skills, just like anything else in the service economy. It's people skills that get you the job or get you the referral, or, you know, being able to do work. You know, there's a whole lot of stuff about doing work for free also. And I do a lot of stuff for free because the value of photography, in my mind, is great. So if I'm doing something for my church that's going to help raise money for our trip to Africa, guess what? I'm donating my time. It's not free. I have a whole other blog post in my mind about things. There is no such thing as free, okay? There's things that cost me something, or there's things that cost you something. But you have to either develop your skills that way, or you can do a lot of things that way. Is it devaluing everybody else's photography? Maybe. That it is a tougher market because of digital and all that. And we can talk about telling kids about not stealing things on the internet. That's a whole other realm too. Oh my gosh, you want to go there? But really, I would just tell people it's people skills. It's business skills, and it's you know, just as hard as any other business where you have to differentiate yourself. I almost wish I had started an air conditioning company instead of a photography business. And it's probably still a good idea because the need's there. It's almost summertime, and I spent way too much money on an air conditioner for my house. I could use an employee discount, right?
Yep.
But the same skills apply to both businesses. It's referrals that make you money. It's the people skills that bring customers back. So,
Do you think that the photoshopping skills is important?
You can pay people to do that. You can pay the amount of time you want to spend editing and rehashing images. Clearly, you want to be a good enough photographer that you don't have to do much of that. If that's what people are wanting, you can do that. It's hard to charge for that if you're not, you know, retouched images are it's a degree of better than the original image. So, selling people on doing that, it's a whole other business into itself.
Well, and maybe as an extension of that question, would you, if someone was going to get into the photography business and they knew Photoshop really well, but they didn't know taking photos, can Photoshop skills make up for poor photography? Or
that's a loaded question. No, the simple answer is no. There are things. I'm going to keep going because it's fresh in my mind. I talk to these kids at night. I tell them the five things that I look for in a picture before I take the picture, right? Doesn't matter which camera you own. Doesn't matter what sort of situation you're in. You have to have a good identifiable subject, unless you're doing fine art or some weird stuff. Identifiable subject, good light or interesting light, layers of story in the picture, you know, foreground, background, what are they saying about the subject, angle, which can either be physical angle, up or down, something interesting, not just boring, or an angle as far as what the story is saying is also an angle, the theoretical angle, and then a moment. A photographer is looking for 3 out of 5 in that. So, I don't know, anybody can come along and take that picture on accident, but to be a professional, you want to be able to do that consistently, and that's sort of where that comes in. I think I've gone off track. What was the question again?
Could someone who's great at Photoshop make up for poor photography? And I think you've answered that.
You can make an interesting picture out of something terrible in Photoshop, but it'll be art instead of a photo.
Yeah.
And that's fine, too. Some people are good at that. Some people can take a mishmash of images that they never even took and turn it into something amazing. And that's a skill I don't have for sure. So, again, if you're honest about what you're doing, great. But it doesn't make it photography. So,
And from my perspective, I think if you're great at Photoshop like that, you probably don't want to be a photographer. You want to be making money as a graphic artist.
Sure,
not as
a
photographer.
There's no reason not to do both.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can go out and collect your own images to work with in Photoshop, more power to you. But it's a separate skill set for sure and not necessarily related.
Yeah, okay.
I know some really good photographers who, you know, still shoot film. So, yeah. It's like, great.
Now, what would you say, you mentioned those five different areas of what a photographer is looking for. What would you say makes a perfect photo or makes a great photo?
Well, you can have 1 out of 5 and have it a great photo because the value of a picture is subjective to anybody.
Right.
I sold a picture, you know, I do sports, high school sports a lot. Sold a picture of the back of a kid running down the football field. He has the ball, but you can't see the ball. You can't see his face. There's people blocking a lot of his body, but he's running away from the camera. And I don't even know. On a normal day, I would not have even put that picture up. I guess because he was running for a touchdown. He ran a long score in. And terrible picture. It was in focus. I'll give it that. And sure enough, the mom, I think that may have been the only touchdown that kid scored all year. The mom bought that picture because the value of it to her had nothing to do with whether it was a good picture or not. So as photographers and artists or whatever you want to classify yourself as, we look at the value of things through the sort of perfect world. You know, yes, I would like for it to have a subject and good light and good layers of story in it. You can have this perfect picture that means nothing to anybody because it has no punch or no emotional impact, and this terrible picture of the kid running down the sidelines for a football score to that mom meant, you know, everything. And she bought it. So there are some qualities there that have nothing to do with a good picture. They give it value. Just who's in it. You know, I have a picture of my son. It's terrible. Well, guess what? It's my son, so it's the most precious picture in the world. But there are measures of sort of, you know, the really good recognized photographers can, you know, tear apart a portfolio. And there's nothing more fun as a photographer than go to sportshooter.com. Anybody out there, sports shooter folks, go to the section of the website where they critique student portfolios and listen to these really top photographers who, you know, have done amazing things with a camera. Look at somebody's work and you think, oh, that's a great picture, and then hear them say, you know, this picture is terrible, and you know, just rip it apart for whatever reason. You know, you weren't looking at their background, and there's, this should be cropped out, and this shouldn't even be there, and yada yada yada. You're like, oh, never mind. I'd be pretty happy to take that picture, except not anymore. So there are established greats in photography past that you can study their work and understand that they were amazing at seeing things before they happened in order to be where they are to take the picture and try to be that good. But the real value of a picture comes from whoever's looking at it. So, it, I don't know. You can take perfect pictures. They just may or may not be valuable to anybody.
Do you have a preference, knowing your work? I'm assuming I don't already know the answer to this. Do you have a preference between photos of people versus landscape?
Oh, I take people pictures mainly.
And food.
But I'm a fan of both, people and food. No, I like the work of good landscape photographers. They probably have more patient personalities than I do, or more less ADD or something than I do. And they probably like to get up earlier in the morning than I do. I like people in general. Uh-oh.
Sorry, I'm moving you a little closer.
It's all good.
They're moving the table to
me. I like people in general and interacting with people. I think that's part of the journalism thing too. Is, you know, you got people and their stories, and that interaction is something I just enjoy. So even if it's headshots, you know, I like taking pictures of people and going back and looking at those pictures and saying, hey, I remember that person and we talked about this and, you know, whatever. So there's, personally, I like that stuff. I do like to look at, you know, classic landscapes and everything else too, and go, I can sort of admire it and try to copy it, but those guys get up really early, honestly.
Or they stay up really late.
Yeah, it's like there's something else about that. I've never been able to bring myself to do it, unless there's lightning involved, and then I like to get out. I don't, something about that.
All right, we'll try some other comparisons. Studio versus on location.
Well, since I don't own a studio, I really prefer location photography. The world is a studio. The best investment I made last year was battery powered strobes, not little strobes, but big studio strobes. And they're the cheaper, you know, they're Alien Bees. With a battery pack, take it out anywhere you want and make things happen that look good and look unique that you can't do with an iPhone. You can't do with, you know, just a point and shoot or anything else. And so that's part of differentiating a skill set, and the technology is there, and the, you know, the battery pack is there. So relatively cheap, you can do it. I like to go out. It's a challenge to go out. The weather may be good, you know, may not. I was out with you guys. It was windy as all get out. So I like the challenge of that. That goes to my sort of, I'm not actually diagnosed ADD, but I like to make that up anyway. I like that challenge every time, though. And the results are always different, and it's always something you can do. There's always a background or a color or something that's happening in an environment that you wouldn't even think of in a studio. But I also like shooting headshots, so it's a different kind of challenge. After about 3 hours of headshots, then I'm ready to go outside and run around or whatever. I used to stop when I worked in Dallas. I would stop and in downtown if it had gotten dark, and I would just stop, park somewhere, and walk around and practice panning with cars or just random shots of light reflecting off of things. Just to stretch my brain a little bit. And then I was at a track meet last week, and I was like, you know what? Those guys that are really good on sports shooter can shoot panning shots of people running. So when it was subjects that I didn't need to get, I had nothing to shoot, I sat there and shot panning shots of, you know, girls running at a track meet. It's like, finding that sort of fun. And that's some, that's another whole other thing. Once you do it for work, you really can stop enjoying it. And you stop doing it for yourself. And so it's good, especially on location, back to that, that you can play. That's important to me, is just being able to play a little bit and maybe make some mistakes you didn't know you were going to make and have that work out for you or not, you know, this sort of thing. So I prefer location, but then again, I don't have a studio. My dream would be to have, you know, 40 acres and just build some random walls and crazy stuff to go crazy on and have friends over to take pictures. That would be fun to me.
Well, see, Laurie and I keep saying that if we buy a bigger house, well, we want some place that has like a shed in the back or a barn in the back so we can have a creative space so I can do my podcasting.
Absolutely.
So she can do her photography, so we can just kind of spread out. You know, I can set up video cameras. We can just have this creative barn.
Tell you what, the best idea I've ever seen, and you can cut this out if you need to, but there's a family that lives down in Crandall that we met through a story for Kaufman County Life magazine that live in a converted airplane hangar. And it is the most amazing thing. It never occurred to me. It's basically warehouse space, you know, at the end of the day, with a big open door on the end. But she pulls her airplane in and backs it in, and the back of the airplane.
Laurie knows her. I think Laurie knows
the Bennetts. You know the Bennetts?
Laurie does.
The back of her plane basically hits the couch, right? And so you've got this space in there, and they've sectioned off rooms, but they've created this space that is multi-use, livable, but also amazingly, you know, you can do anything in there. And they do. I mean, they just have crazy, you know, life experiences that they've created a space to have, as opposed to, and very intentionally, as opposed to living in a house on the street like I do. And I think, wait, that was a great idea.
Yeah.
Now, I'm trying to convince my wife that an airplane hangar would be a great house.
With kids yelling. Yes.
That has not gone over so well, and she's wise, so I listen to her. But I'm working on it, you know. That same thing. I want space that's flexible. So.
Yeah.
Someday.
So, on location, rural, since you're from Kaufman, or urban environment?
Oh, man. Just Saturday night, I was taking pictures of a lady, actually a relative of Renee's, but in Deep Ellum. And just the thing that you have there in any urban space is within a block you can do 50 different looks and things and textures and backgrounds, and that variety, I hate to say ADD again, but it really clicks to go, oh wait, look over there, there's that. Somebody tagged a wall over there. Somebody built this over there. There's new art on the wall over here. So I kind of like urban space. It gives you more options to pose people, even if you got steps and everything else. Now, probably there's just as much variety in a rural setting by a barn, but it doesn't draw my eye as well or something. So there are people who do amazing things there too, and you know, it's still a place. Anytime I like, can go back to that. I like the on location stuff because it puts people in a place, and if it's a place that's related to those people or whatever, you know, you've created more than pictures of people. You've created people in their environment, and so as a storytelling photographer, hopefully, it's good to do that.
And you do. You've done a lot of photos. Looking at your portfolio, you've done a lot of photos in quote unquote urban environments, but they're small towns. So you've done a lot of stuff, which that's a whole different characteristic as well.
Right. You take a Kemp, Texas senior, and you put them in downtown Kemp, Texas. It's going to look like Kemp, Texas, and that's fine. That's perfect. You take a crazy guy with tattoos and everything else, put him in Deep Ellum. That's great, too. It looks like their space. You take the crazy guy from Deep Ellum with tattoos and ear plugs or whatever, put them in downtown Kemp, you have a really amazing picture because it's such a juxtaposition of the crazy guy and the, you know, crazy rural space. But take the hick and put them in Deep Ellum. Whatever.
Yeah. That's why you see all
these. Not that Kemp people are hicks. Sorry. Edit that.
That's why you see all of these cowboys show up in Deep Ellum, I think. It's
and they're always bringing a photographer. You know, it's high school right. photos, kids from Kemp, Texas, or Forney, Texas, or
Deep Valley. Yeah, yeah. It's really fun to play with that sort of. Go back to angle on photography. You know, there's an angle to be had of having that sort of tension within the picture of something that's out of place, and maybe you don't even pick up on it when you look at it, but you go, something ain't right there, you know. Just another fun aspect to play with.
Yeah. Perfect blue skies, or maybe even lightly, partly cloudy blue skies, or golden hour.
Can I get both? Can I get a golden sunset after a storm has gone through?
Okay.
That
wasn't one of your choices, but we'll leave a space for
that. If I have to have one or the other, I'll take blue skies. Oh, man. No. Slightly cloudy blue skies. You got to have some depth to it. Sunset light is great. I love it. But there's something about, you know, popping a blue sky behind people or anything. It's like, that's good. I like pictures of sunsets as pictures of sunsets. Maybe I just haven't mastered the art of putting those in my pictures yet. But the things you can do with a blue sky on a nice little puffy clouds in there, I like that.
Okay. Tell me, what would you say is, of all the photos you've taken over the last 20, 30 years, what's
I'm
been
only 37.
Well, you said you'd done it your whole life. That's why I said 20 to 30. I didn't say 20 to 50.
Let's see. First camera was when I was probably 10. So there we go.
So what would you say has been your favorite photo? I mean, you said there's value to photos. So maybe it is something, just a quick snap of your phone, but what's been the favorite photo that you've taken?
Well, obviously there's a bunch of Joshua, my son, that I found one the other day. It was like, oh my goodness, he was small. I mean, I didn't realize how small he was. So those have personal value. As far as an actual picture, one that jumps out of my mind is, you kind of get lucky on some, where you go, the light was right and the subject was perfect and everything happened there that I was not even paying attention to that I should have been, that still worked. And so there's a picture of a kid riding a horse at a youth rodeo event, and he's riding toward the door of a barn, but you can't really see it in the picture, but the barn is reflecting all his light back on his face. And so the light on his face is perfect. The horse is there. The saddle. He's got some. There's some colored rope. And there's all these little things that come together to make it just perfect with this kid, little kid on a big horse, cowboy hat, and that always is just one of my favorites. The other is shooting for the paper. Not long after I started working at the Tribune, we had two soldiers die in Afghanistan within a month and a half of each other, and then we had another accident with three girls who got hit by a car. This was in a couple months, and not long after I started working there. So to kind of be thrown into a situation where I'm green, and all of a sudden I'm a photographer at a soldier's funeral was just killer to me, to be the guy with snapping pictures, right? And you start thinking about the value of the picture to the community as a whole, and within that time frame, I took some pictures that, you know, really, I think, shared the experience with the public that I wanted to do. So just coming into that situation completely out of my league and being able to take some pictures I was proud of for that moment and being trusted by the people, the families, pulls together a lot of emotional things for me that really make those some of my favorite pictures, even though they were the hardest to take. So,
well, and I'm thinking too. So you cover these funerals. You recently covered the funeral of a Dallas firefighter that passed away as well. That was killed in the accident. When you're covering those events from a photojournalism perspective, are there certain shots you may take and you're saying, I can never share this with the family, or I can never do this, or are there shots you're like, I can't take that shot,
there are those at, say, crime scenes that you may end up with a picture that you can't show anybody or that you shouldn't show anybody. It was different at funerals because I was doing it for the paper, really.
Right.
I don't want to take a picture of a mother crying when she's being handed a flag, but I took it anyway because it was for that purpose of sharing this experience with the public in general. So I think it forces you journalistically to do something that may be uncomfortable, but it's not something you wouldn't share. It's because you want to share that you take it. There were some situations, I guess, where I felt incredibly intrusive. But like even Scott Tanksley graduated from Kemp High School the year I was a freshman. So it was actually some mutual friends who asked me to be at that. It wasn't for work, even though I'd shared the pictures. But I look back at those other experiences when I was working for the paper that prepared me to be in a funeral with a camera. So, I don't mind taking pictures at a funeral anymore. if there's a value in it to the family, right? So, you know, or to the public, I guess. But it definitely changes how you feel about being a part of something like that, that you don't want to intrude in a private moment. But some of those are not private moments at all. They're really public moments. So, I don't know. It's hard to say. Because I try to put myself in the perspective of the family that's there. And you know, do I want somebody taking pictures of me? Ooh, maybe not. Yeah. Maybe not. So,
well, and in those situations, you're probably thinking, you know, I'm assuming you're shooting with a long-range zoom, and you're thinking, I'm really glad I have this.
Right.
This zoom.
Little separation in case somebody runs at me. No.
Yeah.
You want to be equipped appropriately. You want to be dressed appropriately. You want to be as absolutely invisible as you can be. But in a quiet moment, in a click of a shutter, you really feel like you're out there doing something incredibly wrong. You know, you're just in front of people that might think badly of you or whatever. So, I don't know. That was tough and really stuck with me for the rest of... will stick with me for the rest of my shooting career anyway. It changes the way you look at stuff. I don't know that without the family's cooperation, one in particular, but who also saw the value in what we were doing as far as being a journalist. It's good that people can see a value in that. I was very blessed that both of the soldier families were open to us as the local media for Terrell, covering that and sharing that with the public, because I don't think every family would be open to that, and that's their right. But to have that access, access is everything as a journalist. So that was just invaluable, and they made it possible, sort of internally for me to be comfortable being there, because they weren't closed at all.
On a totally lighter subject.
Yeah, there are good light subjects. Speaking of light, hey!
What's your favorite gear? I get a lot of folks that are shooting photographers.
I hate gear talk.
Oh, never mind then.
I like cameras. I'm a Canon guy just because that's what I've always had. My first camera in high school that I went out and bought was a Canon... What was it? Elan. EOS Elan. I had bought the original film Rebel, and I took it back to the camera shop, and I was happy that I did. But ever since then, the controls have been almost the same. Obviously, digital adds a bunch of buttons, but the actual camera controls are almost identical. So, once you have that control surface done, any other technology upgrades that happen inside the camera bodies are great. But they're going to go back and forth in quality, so I'm not loyal to Canon, except that that's what I have. And just a range of lenses, whatever I can get my hands on. whatever's said, appropriate.
You said battery-powered strobes?
Battery-powered. I'm using some, I have some Allen Krom Studio strobes that have been very good to me. But then I bought these Alien Bee, they're called Einsteins, that then attached to a Vagabond, a battery pack. And just the ability to take that kind of power, and they're not super powerful, but there are a lot more battery-powered strobes on the market now than there were even 2 years ago. So that technology is getting really cool. But to take a studio light out on a senior portrait session or whatever and pop them with some light, that changes the way you shoot. Absolutely changes the way you shoot. And who was it? Strobist or one of the well-known, social media photographer types said, I only shoot with available light, and if it's a flash, that's available. So that's the mantra I like is, do what you do, make it look good, and that'll work. If you're set in one particular available light only photography or whatever else, that generally means you haven't mastered the other ones yet, I think. So, it's like Photoshop. I don't think you need to use Photoshop for everything. I just take a good picture in the camera. So you haven't mastered Photoshop yet then?
Right.
Like, me neither. Hire somebody. Yeah.
What gear, if someone has got the bug, maybe they've been taking photos with their iPhone, or maybe they've had a little digital camera.
What do you go by? The thing I haven't tried yet are the newer mirrorless, changer. All right, we're getting kicked out.
Usually we give a warning, but we forgot to.
This is the warning.
We just got kicked out of Starbucks.
The Something Beautiful podcast is being kicked out of Starbucks at this moment.
You can make a windscreen out of pretty much anything.
That's good, because Starbucks napkins work great. Who knew?
All right, so starting out, you said, as far as gear.
I haven't played with the changeable lens, mirrorless, crazy cameras that they're coming out with, but the image quality from the people that I've seen using them are amazing. So you can do that. Anything with manual controls is what I say.
Okay.
I don't care about Canon. I don't care about Nikon. I don't care about Fuji and some of the other ones that are coming out that are excellent image quality. Just get something with manual control so you can play with it. And then you learn how to do what you want it to do in your brain with the camera itself.
Yeah. Flash, think flash is something you buy right away, or I personally hate on-camera flash.
Yes.
Hey, we're doing a podcast! Come on! Goodness
racing
gracious.
Guys with their Mustangs. Come on.
What are they thinking?
Get a real gun.
Don't they know who we are?
Yes. No. And they don't care. On-camera flash, there are ways to use it that are good. Ask a good wedding photographer about using on-camera flash. They can balance it. It's, again, manual controls. If you learn how to use it well, it can enhance your photography. If you just put it on automatic, it's going to look terrible. Go to strobist.com and learn everything you can from the Strobist man. He, opened up a lot of stuff to people like me trying to learn how to put light where it looks good. And so he's not the only resource, but the biggest one probably, where you can go through a series of lessons of, here's how to do this, mm-hmm. And actually make it make sense in the camera. But just say no to on-camera flash until you know how to use it. How about that?
That's good. But sometimes it does end up a lot better because people refuse to use a flash and it's completely dark and grainy.
Right. Well, there's, and this is the advice I've given to some folks asking about buying lights recently. Buy some the constant lights for video with compact fluorescence. They're not bright, but high ISO is so good in the cameras, you can bump it up there and you see what you're going to get before you take the picture. Strobes are more powerful and you want to know how to do that so you can go outside and do crazy stuff, but the real value in
the constant lights is being able to see what you're doing. Plus, if you're going to shoot video anyway, buy some lights, you know, and just use them. It's any available light is available light. So,
yeah.
Make your own. There's lots of do-it-yourself stuff on the internet too. I did one with Christmas lights after Christmas one year of just wrapping them on a white foam core and made a little softbox out of them and made beautiful pictures. It's like you can do this with any light. It's okay.
Very good. Any last thoughts, advice?
Man, there are so many aspects of photography that I've barely dipped my toe in, and so many resources out there that are so good, and so many creative people that you get to access through the internet now that just keep looking at stuff. That's what I tell the kids too, is look at a lot of pictures and don't just say, oh, that's a nice picture, but why is it a nice picture? And then you can learn from it. And it's, the world is so wide open, it's crazy. I'm not that old, but I can't imagine going back to a time when you can't just access information and develop a skill within days as opposed to the time, you know, that it used to take. So don't hate it. Love it. And just, you know, go with it. But keep learning stuff too. I have had lots of friends become photographers or asking for advice on how to become a photographer, and they have maybe a camera, and you know, there's just so much more to it that's way beyond even where I am, that, you know, don't expect it to be easy. Put some time in, do it, whatever. They're walking us out of the outside. My advice would be find the pretty light and figure out why.
Yeah.
That's really it. And then, yeah, and then learn business. Don't learn photography. Selling yourself is something you need in every business. And probably, you know, it's very competitive. Prices are down on family photos, and prices are down on weddings, and prices are down on whatever. So if you're going to have a business, you know, you really have to develop a skill where the money is and make it that way. So you can all learn that before. I think that's
good.
That or
yeah.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the extended edition of the Something Beautiful podcast. Thanks to Don Johnson for sharing his story and some of his insights into sharing stories with photography. Really appreciate it. And hopefully next time we'll maybe get started a little earlier so we don't get tossed out in the middle of an interview. Either way, had a great time. Thanks again to Don, and be sure to check him out on Twitter, East Texas Photo. You can follow us, SB Podcast, and you can always find us on the web at somethingbeautifulpodcast.com. Thanks again for listening. I'm Jonathan Blundell. Have a great week.